contract we're entering into today is the only contract that it's justifiable to enter into. To help each other become conscious. Or, to put it more even straighter, we are each entering into a contract to get straight or become conscious ourselves through the use of group process. Right? That's the only really way we can say it. That if you think you can become more conscious by another means other than being with other people, do it. There is a stage in one's process of consciousness evolution where satsang or sangha, that is hanging out with other people who are on the path, is useful. And then there are other parts of the journey where they're completely irrelevant. We are following at this moment the upaya, the method, of using our senses to go beyond our senses. We're using a tantric method. That is, we're using each other in form in order to transcend each otherness in form. Because everything that's in my head that you now think is not in your head, but will be by the end of the day, were you conscious, you would realize is already in your head. So you are in an illusion now, I am in an illusion, that this is a process, and we are trying to use the illusion to transcend the illusion. And when you can bring your mind to one point in this, such that when I gave you that instruction for 3 minutes, think of nothing but one form, and you're able to do that without any elaboration, without any other thoughts, and so on, then you are ready to go through a doorway because you have developed the instrument you need to do it, which is the instrument of one-pointedness of mind. There are a number of Western models of how things happen that we are all somewhat stuck in, which is that there is something to do is the first one. We've got to do something. A person comes and says, I'm confused, what should I do? Note he is not too confused to ask, what should I do? Which is a program he has in his head. If he were totally confused, he'd be free, but he isn't. He isn't confused enough. And I say to him, it doesn't matter what you do. And this is irritating to him. He thinks he's asked the question wrong, and that if he asked it right, I'd really tell him what to do. And he says, well, shall I meditate or should I just go out and, you know, make love and eat pizzas? And I said, doesn't matter. He says, should I eat meat or should I? Doesn't matter. Okay. Should I hang out around beautiful people or should I? It doesn't matter. Now here, I don't eat meat. I hang out around beautiful people. I'm working on my consciousness full time, and I'm saying to him, it doesn't matter. Now how could that be possible? Am I just lying? Does it matter to me? A guy came up to me the other night, and he said at a meeting in Tufts, and he says, would you mind if I took a razor and cut off your beard? And I said, yes. So it's my game uniform. I said, if you came up to me and held me down and cut off my beard, it wouldn't matter to me. That would be the way it is. Now I don't have a beard. See, the reason I do everything I do is because I do everything I do. There are choices being made every minute of the day, but the question is, who is making the choices? And the answer is that I'm not making the choices. The choices are happening. It's not my but thy will. The reason I say to people it's not, it doesn't matter is because to the extent that they're asking the question, what do I do, they're already asking something, and therefore the process is so clearly in operation that it's not like they can stop asking the question. They can stop for a minute or more, but they can't stop. And it turns out that once you start to ask a question, once you start to see through the illusion, once you start to realize that there is a state of being conscious, or in Gurdjieffian terms, a higher faculty, or different degrees of enlightenment, or objective consciousness, or whatever metaphor you want to use, the spirit, once you realize that, then everything else becomes part of the process of coming to that. And in fact, even before you realize that, everything in life was part of the process of coming to that anyway. Except that you weren't aware that that's what it was you were doing. When you make love, it's to come to the light. When you work to be successful, it's to have a certain feeling of bliss which is very light. When you do any act which you previously say, well, I'm doing that for selfish motives, that is still coming to the light. And when you begin to see that selfish motives is a cop-out to label them thus, it's all selfish motive. But the social responsible link that is obvious immediately the minute you start to become conscious is that you can do nothing for another human being but work on yourself. And that as you work on yourself, you get to a state almost immediately where you see that every other human being is yourself, and therefore whatever you are doing, you are working on yourself, and you further see that until everybody makes it, nobody makes it because everybody is one. It's just a sequence of thoughts you go through as you start to meditate. And then the whole hype of am I doing it for me or doing it for you becomes totally irrelevant. Totally irrelevant. very easy to carry into yoga a whole model of good and evil. Oh, I ate well today. Oh, I didn't eat well today. I didn't eat yoga-like today. I kept a diary and I had 4 lustful thoughts. Maybe tomorrow I can have 3. We just start to go back into our trip of collecting and measuring and evaluating and doing, which is our Western journey. Just another place to hide, another illusion. So even though today we're going to be discussing Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga, and I'm going to go systematically through the steps of it and how it's done and why you do it and the whole business, at least where it's, what's coming through here. To the extent that you still are in the model that it is that you collect something which you then use, it is not of any use to you. Because these methods only work when they really don't work as objects. It's like doing mantra. The way one does mantra when mantra works is that mantra does one. One doesn't do mantra. You tune in on the mantra. Mantra just is happening. You just focus. It's like tuning your radio dial in on the mantra. You don't say, I'll do mantra. Even though you pick up beads and start to do mantra. Business of what you label, what part of the figure and ground you label. See, I can talk about diet and I can discuss the relationship of what you eat to what kind of consciousness you can reach under certain conditions until you're a fully realized being. And you can go home and say, well, therefore I will eat thus and so. And then spend great amounts of time wishing you were eating something else. Under these conditions, you are creating as much new karma about food as if you were eating the something else, practically. Not quite, but practically. The basic rule is to be here now. The rule is to start from exactly where we are at this moment. The rule is to be able to say about oneself and the universe with all of its horror, with all of its beauty, with all of its imperfections, Kali and all her manifestations, it's all right. It's all okay. Murder, rape, overpopulation, pollution, riots, fascistic doctrine, suppression of other human beings, starvation. Birth, death, spring and fall and winter. It's all right. It's all the way it's supposed to be. It's all the way it's supposed to be? How could that be? That I am this imperfect, impure being who's got all these desires and all these neuroses and all these frustrations, and this is just the way it's supposed to be? Aren't I supposed to work for something? Aren't I supposed to keep a model in my head of what is pure and what is right and what is good and how it should be? How my body should be, how my thoughts should be, how the world should be, how people should be? Every one of those models you keep in your head keeps it from happening. Water, when it floats downstream, when it goes down the stream, doesn't have a model of what it's doing. It's just being water, and water floats downstream because that's the way water works. Thing that is extraordinarily hard for any of us to truly realize and to have sufficient faith to accept is that if you stop having views, if you stop having models, if you stop planning, if you stop desiring, organizing, structuring, it's all right. But that means all the way back in, you got to stop doing it at every level, even the primordial levels. See, Freud talks about the unconscious, and he says, behind all the things you think are what it is you're doing, and you think you're doing, and why you think you're doing it, there are a whole set of other motives and desires of what you're doing and why you're doing it and what you think you're doing. All just one level down in. And it's defended against so you don't know about it. And then Jung comes along and he says, behind even those, the individual unconscious, there is a collective unconscious. That is, you're part of a whole process of evolution in which all of those desires are part of you too. And all of those unfulfilled karmic things are happening and being lived out. And all those thought forms exist in you too. And for many years we say, well, Jung is right, and if Jung is right, then we must keep careful control on the game, because if we let that next level come out, it's all going to be hell for everybody. And all the way along, mystics are touching a place inside themselves, which is behind Freud and behind Jung and behind Adler and behind all of the models of how it is, and they touch a place and they say, it's all right. But if you're going to run Earth Week, and somebody comes up to you and says, it's all right, you don't want to hear that. Because the justification for your action is based on the fact that it's not all right. It's not all right, but there's something to do. And there's nothing that a person wants less than to have the justification for his own actions pulled away from him. My father spent years earning money to be secure, and now he's secure, and now he spends years earning money to be secure. And I say to him, but you're already secure. But you don't say that, because that he can't hear that, because he doesn't want to make that change, because then what would be the reason for what he's doing, or what would be the reason for his life? When I was at college, I had a roommate who was very poor. He was an orphan. And he was studying to be a doctor. And his whole life was dedicated to becoming a doctor and to marrying the girl that he had, his cousin, and to becoming secure. And he spent ever since we went to college doing just that, and he's done it. He's got three children. He's the head of psychiatric research at the Boston State Hospital or something like that. Very reputable, good person. Now, when I was at college, we were roommates, except that I had a lot of money. I didn't have it, but I knew my father had it. I knew he wasn't going to let me starve to death. And in a way, my roommate's justification for life wasn't available to me. And I felt like the poor little rich boy. I felt gypped. It seemed like he had such an easy trip ahead of him. While every day I had to figure out, what am I going to do and why am I going to do it? Because I couldn't justify it like my father had or like his roommate had. I couldn't say, well, I've got to do it in order to. And I was constantly looking for new justifications. But because of that predicament, I was realizing that I was imposing all the justifications. He could hide in the fact that justification had been cast upon him, while I felt that I had to make up a justification. And therefore, everyone was just another made-up justification. So in a way, I was blessed, it turned out, in that I was given the opportunity to see that my desires created my universe much more readily than he was. Because he kept saying, look, it's reality. That's the way it is. While I had to say, that's the way I'm making it. And that, of course, is the understanding that finally comes to you. That your desires keep creating your universe. Your desires keep creating the universe. And the only reason you aren't at this moment a fully enlightened being is because of your desires, because of your attachments. Including, by the way, your attachment to knowing, or your attachment to becoming an enlightened being. You don't stop your desires as long as you stay in a human body. All you do is to break the identification with them. That's all that's required. It's not necessary to give up anything. It's merely necessary to give up attachment to the thing. That's all that's required. It isn't necessary for the guy that's leading Earth Week not to lead Earth Week. If it is his thing to lead Earth Week, he should lead Earth Week, and he should lead it consciously and beautifully. But if he is attached to leading Earth Week, how poignant. During the day, we'll be talking about the words like attachment, involvement, commitment. All in the context of yoga, which means a method of union. Yoga means union, just union. And the bodhisattva role, which is the role of total involvement and service with one's fellow man, can only be realized when one has experienced yoga or union. As long as you identify only with being separate from other beings, your service to other beings only increases the illusion of separateness. The bodhisattva lives in the two places at once. He has gone into the void, into the emptiness, into the place beyond form. He has seen, yes, it all is eternally. Behind wars, behind dying, behind being born, behind all form, in all form, through all form, he sees ah. He is ah. He tastes of eternal now. And then, after residing there for as long as he resides there, he comes back into form. But at the same time, he never leaves the eternal present. So that from then on, he lives simultaneously with two awarenesses, although he is not intellectualizing about these two. Every act is based on those two things known simultaneously. There is nothing, there is no you, there is no me, and at the same moment there is you and there is me. There is no form, there is form. That all dualities are in fact one. And that at the same moment there's the one, there is the many. The Mahamudra, the paradox of the two in one. You've got to be at the place where it all... You're doing, look at me, I'm doing full time. And yet I know I'm not doing anything, and there's nobody doing anything. Sometimes one of them gets the dominant, until you're finished, one of them can become dominant, or another one can become dominant. At one point, the idea that I'm not doing anything becomes dominant, and I get out in front of a thousand people, and I sit down and I got nothing to say, and there's no them and there's no me and there's no reason to be here. And then I think, uh-oh, too far over in the void, see, too far, meaning I can't keep it all together. The game finally is to keep it all together as it keeps happening. Like one day you've got a wife and children, and then the next day you suddenly see your God, their God, they always were, they always will be. Who's got wives and children? The hell with it. I've got to go help the world. That's not keeping it together. Because at one level you have a wife and children. And the denial of any level to live at another level is merely another kind of psychosis than the one you're in now. Or another kind of illusion. You can just trade illusions. I'll give you my illusion for your illusion. We'll cure you, meaning we'll bring you back into our illusion. Okay. Now, all this is in a way to just to formulate for ourselves what itch it is we're scratching. Because one of the real habits we all have is to collect information for which we have no apparent use, saying we'll be useful later. That was what all of education seemed to be designed around. You say, but I don't want to learn how to factor and analyze. Well, you'll need it later. You'll be happy later you learn Latin. But there's nobody to speak Latin with. Well, you wait. Later on, it'll all be... You'll find the roots and derivations of the words. It'll be very useful to know Latin. And somewhere along the line, you almost buy that. You don't quite, but you almost buy it. If you really bought it, there wouldn't be an 87% forgetting curve in 24 hours after exams. That's because you don't really buy it. But you do it. You try to do it. Because you have no itch to scratch at that moment. See, education only happens, really, in one trial learning. It only happens when you are so open to something because you want to know it so badly that you become one with it. You just sop it up like it's like how, just like how you're really thirsty on a very hot day after a long something or other. You don't have to have many reinforced trials to know you're enjoying the water or you want to absorb it into yourself. You just can't get it in fast enough. Well, that's the same way with how you learn something when you really want to know it. And so we can play the game of education of, isn't that interesting? I really want to know that. But you're not wanting to know it like you want that water. And the result is you collect it and you sort of put it away on the shelf and use a little of it now and a little of it then because you've still got a game going that you really want to continue playing. And because we are all, most of us are dominant in our intellectual center in the West, we collect symbols and store them for later use, like hamsters collect grain or, you know, we just collect. I'd have hamsters and they'd keep collecting and collecting until they had huge mountains of food. I just kept figuring I'll give them as much food as they want to collect. And they just, internally, you just kept going and collecting, collecting, collecting. Now I'm going to talk about Ashtanga Yoga. I'm just going to suggest you let the whole thing wash over you. Wash over you. And that which is ready, which you're ready for, will go through the sieve and you'll have it. You don't have to collect it. It'll be there. Something you're really ready to hear that I say, you will have heard the minute I say it, and you'll say, yeah, of course, that's right. And all it'll do is bring it into form for you and that'll be done. And if anything I say, you say, I wonder if that's true or not, forget it. Because it'll come up later. You don't have to worry now. Because anything you are ready to use, you now know. And all I can, in the course of my speaking or any other experience you have in the environment, is it will reinforce the fact you already know it.